So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
So, take a look.
Motown's gone mad. Halloween Havoc is here. Two demons have emerged. The giant, he has a Jones for destruction. His motorcycle smashing, back cracking, bone crunching, neck choking rampage has opened the ghastly gate for the man who would not, could not stay down. WCW World Champion Hulk Hogan has crossed over to the dark side to take on the evil powers in their own eerie world. Shudder to think about their monster trunks locked up in a sumo-style showdown. If survival is possible, they will then be hauntingly close when they see each other eye to eye inside the fortress called the Ring. It will happen before your very eyes here at Halloween Havoc 95.
Oh yes, we could not allow Halloween to pass by without doing this edition of Review Away. It's Wei Ting and John Pollock here. Today's edition, Wei, we are looking back at the 1995 Halloween Havoc, which featured not just man versus man, but machine versus machine.
Yes. First of all, before we begin, I just want to thank everybody for their contributions to their Facebook group of Review Away. I appreciate all the feedback, and a lot of people have some very good ideas. Right now, our third Halloween Havoc? In our short time, in our short existence, this is probably our third Halloween Havoc, is it not? We did one last week.
Did we do another one prior to it?
We did 1998 before.
Oh, that's right. This is number three. Yep, this is number three for Halloween Havoc. So we'll be putting Halloween to bed after this one.
Okay.
So let's get into it. The review, Halloween Havoc, from the Joe Louis Arena in Detroit, Michigan, from October of 1995, as you heard coming into the segment here. The campy opening where, is this over the top, how they wrote this. The fortress called the Ring was where the Giant and Hulk Hogan would do battle, Wei, and boy, yes, was this exciting. We had Tony Schiavone and Bobby Heenan on commentary, and they immediately began to promote the Battle of the Sumo Monster Trucks tonight. Yes. And then they alerted us that Ric Flair had been attacked prior to the pay-per-view, Wei, by Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman. Wasn't this the exact same angle before Starrcade 1990, where Ric Flair was injured the day of the show, only to come back and later do an angle?
Wasn't this the exact same angle as any other wrestling angle that's ever happened, where a guy gets injured and then comes back and turns on the other guy?
Shockingly. That brings us into our first matchup of the evening. Diamond Dallas Page defending the television championship against Johnny B. Badd, a.k.a. Mark Marrow, and they showed the build to this one, Wei, because it all happened when Mark Marrow had received a U.S. title shot against Sting. But then the big night came, Wei, and Johnny B. Badd had car trouble and couldn't make it to the arena.
He had a flat tire, John.
He had a flat tire, and then during the promo with Diamond Dallas Page and Max Muscle, the Scott Putski Award winner on this show, they announced to Johnny B. Badd that you don't deserve a title shot. And Max Muscle put in the little line saying, "Yeah, real bad luck. Four flat tires." And Mark Marrow said, "How did you know it was four flat tires? I said a flat tire." And then gave him the lamest punch in the history of work punches in WCW history. And that brought us to this match.
So you have the basis of this feud based on a couple flat tires. Never mind the fact that this is for the World TV title. Who cares? That's a side note.
This guy's fucked with a man's car, Wei.
It's expensive to get those tires filled.
So we go into the match, and it started with a fake Johnny B. Badd coming out and distracted Diamond Dallas Page for the babyface Johnny B. Badd to run in and attack DDP from behind. This match was off to a great start.
Yes. Do you want to go through the finish?
They had this weird gimmick during the match, Wei, where Kimberly, who was in Diamond Dallas Page's corner, would hold up cards to say 10. That move was a 10. And it all built to a spot where Kimberly gave Johnny B. Badd a 10, Wei, because she was smitten with Johnny B. Badd, which begged for a Rena Marrow-Kimberly feud, which never materialized
in WCW. Yeah, well, that's too bad.
Johnny B. Badd, his big finisher here was a wind-up punch called the Tutti Frutti.
Jesus.
And he was about to deliver this when Max Muscle stopped Johnny B. Badd. Then later, Johnny B. Badd ducked a clothesline from Muscle, who clotheslined DDP and Johnny B. Badd secured the victory. This match went 17 minutes and 30 seconds away.
I gotta say, there have been pretty awful wrestling names for moves in the past, but this match probably had about four of those very, very bad ones. So we have Diamond Dallas Page has this move he calls the pancake.
The pancake.
How devastating. The pancake. He's got the Diamond Dream. Mark Merrow has the bad day.
The bad day. I couldn't even make out what Shivani kept saying it over and over again.
It's the bad day. It's the bad day. That's the pancake.
Oh, I don't know who the agents were that came up with these names, but they were the least intimidating ones. Imagine getting knocked out by the Tutti Frutti.
Yeah, or the pancake.
Oh, my God. Anything else you want to note about this? Johnny B. Badd wins the television title, and boy, was he happy.
He was ecstatic about this win. The only, like, the way he was building this up in the post-match interview, it was like this was his childhood dream to win the TV title, but he had already won it before. This is his second reign, so
maybe it was his dream
to win it two times.
Be a two-time champion. We then got a breakdown of the Hulk Hogan versus Giant monster sumo truck fight between Tony Schiavone and Bobby Heenan, with Tony Schiavone bringing up the very valid point. We've seen Hulk Hogan drive. We've never seen the Giant drive before. What will his driving be like?
Yeah.
Wasn't this having you on the edge of your seat wave?
Well,
if you had never seen, I imagine you haven't seen this event before. What did you even envision this monster truck match would be?
I guess I envisioned more of a demolition derby.
On top of a building. A five-story high building called Cobo Hall.
Well, I don't know what this, what is a monster truck battle? What is it? What is it? Who came up with this?
Speaking of who came up with this, next out was the Zodiac, the latest gimmick from Ed Leslie. Billed from the land of yin and yang. He came down to the ring, and he came out to the future entrance music of Rey Mysterio, which is the only thing in history that Ed Leslie and Rey Mysterio, Oscar Gutierrez, will ever have in common, was that they had the same theme music in WCW.
Was Ed Leslie ever caught for steroid prescriptions?
No, but he was caught for, he had cocaine while he was working at a Subway, and they thought it was anthrax, and he was arrested for it.
Close enough.
The Zodiac's entrance was just ridiculous, where he made these stupid faces, and he was doing like a tomahawk chop with his stupid hair that was gelled up into a little vertical curl. God, he looked horrible. And right at the start of this match, I should mention he was taking on Randy Savage. Ed Leslie and Randy Savage. What a match.
In 1995.
A female fan ran into the ring during this match. Why you would choose this match of all matches to do a run-in is beyond me. But a female ran in, and she got a huge pop. And the wrestlers just went to the outside and wrestled. And Bobby Heenan had the line of the match when he said, "Listen to the ovation for the Macho Man." As they were clearly cheering this woman getting arrested by the Detroit police. Uh-huh. They immediately got back into the ring, and Savage hit a top rope elbow, and this match was over in a minute 30. We had a squash match, and Heenan noted that Savage went off the top rope like a gazelle.
Yes, yes. Well, yes, this was a complete squash. Only the first of many Dungeon of Doom appearances throughout the night.
Yes. I also want to note that Tony Schiavone ended this match by stating, "Good thing it didn't go 25 minutes." And I agreed with Tony Schiavone. I'm glad it went 90 seconds and not 25 minutes. We then go backstage. Gene Okerlund is with Johnny B. Badd. And Badd states, "If you believe, you can achieve. I'll never quit." And he puts over WCW. And then he left the company 5 months after this match. To our next match away, we get Road Warrior Hawk taking on Kurosawa, who New Japan Pro Wrestling fans will know under his name Manabu Nakanishi. Under this name, Kurosawa, which just made me think of that song "One Week" by the Bare Naked Ladies.
Why is that?
They have that lyric about Kurosawa.
Like Kurosawa, I make mad films. Okay, I don't make films, but if I did, they'd have a samurai.
Okay.
The song just played there. So this one way, Kurosawa, one of your countrymen, apparently broke the arm of Hawk back in August.
Yes.
And that was the impetus for this big rematch.
That's right. He wins.
Yes.
That's it. There's nothing else.
Big driving clothesline by Hawk to Colonel Robert Parker. Samoan drop by Kurosawa. And Parker held down Kurosawa. Now, if you look at the law of physics in this, he was holding Kurosawa's legs down while the legs were on the ropes. This would not affect the leverage of Hawk kicking out. But somehow they were able to talk Hawk into doing this job with this nonsensical finish. So Kurosawa, after the match, my favorite part of this match, he's leaving the ring and he just yells, Kurosawa!
Ichiban.
Would you ever yell your own name after you want to fight with? I guess if you...
Yeah, Wei Ting. Wei Ting.
Ichiban.
It feels good, doesn't it?
Backstage, Gene Okerlund is with Randy Savage. And Savage cut this weird promo. And then at the end, he yelled at Gene Okerlund that he had a crooked mustache. And Okerlund said that Savage's beard is off.
I love this. It was Savage
was fucking around. I don't care.
It was hilarious. Savage is... too much of him is no good, but I mean, this had been the first dose of a Randy Savage promo that I had been exposed to in many years, so I enjoyed this. And yeah, his mustache is crooked.
Brutal. I'll tell you about Brutal Way. Jerry Lynn, under the gimmick of Mr. JL, then took on Sabu, who was accompanied by the Sheik. Who is a legendary figure in Detroit, specifically wrestling at Cobo Hall. And they always said that he eventually killed the town, which would be a theme that would play into the Cobo Hall interaction with Halloween Havoc later in the show. We got an Asahi Moonsault by Sabu, who nailed JL and the Sheik.
And the Sheik.
The 70-plus-year-old Sheik at the time, taking a big, big bump from his nephew, Terry Brunk. We saw a victory roll attempt by Sabu off the top rope, which I thought was rather impressive. Crowd couldn't give a fuck about this match. Sheik was running around with a machete this whole match. And then Sabu got the win with a split-legged moonsault. And then after the match, Sheik went into business for himself and threw a fireball into the face of JL. And this was not a spot that was planned, and Sabu and Sheik got backstage and were fired after this.
Wow. Yeah, is that what happened?
Never brought back.
I did not understand this fireball thing at all.
It was Sheik completely doing that on his own.
The match had ended, and within seconds of the last pinfall, the guy just tosses a ball of fire onto Jerry Lynn's face. It made no sense in terms of storyline. I don't know why the guy would even do it. Why?
Very unsportsmanlike.
He should be in jail.
He should be, Way. I know, you're very outraged by this.
Yes.
Jerry Lynn was the guest we were hoping to get this week, but I had a very busy week, and I was not able to establish contact with Mr. JL. So
I wanted to hear Mr. JL talk about getting the fireball in the face.
Then we went to what I thought was the highlight of the show, one of the two highlights of the show, the Dungeon's Lair with King Curtis Iaukea and Kevin Sullivan. I don't know how we can possibly recap this way without just playing part of this segment. I thought it was awesome.
Solomon! My son! The moon is full over Detroit, Michigan! The stars! Solomon! All lined up, and the great Milky Way is ready for you, my son. In Tokyo, Japan, in Peking, China, it's the start of another day. They say, Sullivan, my son, that there will be a total eclipse of the sun today around the world. Because, Sullivan, we are here, right here now. And tonight, you will walk upon the galaxies because your giant and the insurance of the Yeti, you will destroy Hulkamania around the globe.
I thought it was awful.
What?
You're okay. Wrestling in 1995, you have to. There's room for a little cartoon, but this was just way too over the top. The moody lighting, the stupid music in the background, and you just have like a bald, ugly dude talking. Nobody cared. The crowd was booing. The crowd was booing when this was happening.
But weren't you intrigued when they announced that the insurance policy was here tonight and that the Yeti had broken out of the ice from the Himalayas?
This stable, the Dungeon of Doom, is probably responsible for some of the worst gimmicks WCW has ever seen. You got the Zodiac, the Shark, the Yeti, Loch Ness, Braun the Leprechaun. This stable didn't exist for too long. I mean, maybe 2 years tops, but within those 2 years...
That's very long in wrestling.
Well, they had quite the run of shitty, shitty ideas.
Next up, we go to Lex Luger and Ming. I had to fast forward through some of this. This was over 13 minutes of Lex Luger and Ming. Terribly long match. Ming grabbed a golden spike, and then Kevin Sullivan ran down and broke up the count, and Luger won this match by disqualification.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
Horrible match.
At about this point is when I fell asleep as well.
Oh, yeah.
I had to split this into two viewings. I completely... This match knocked me out.
But you did this all in one night.
No, I did it in two.
Oh, you did break it up overnight.
Well, because I had started it, and then I had stopped, and then I had to wake myself up and rush to finish this piece of shit. Yeah, go ahead. I just want to mention, before this match started, they had shots of the tombstones that were props in front of the stage.
Did you notice some of the names?
And yeah, there's one tombstone that said Crockett on it.
I know. That was definitely an inside reference to Jim Crockett, which...
Who died?
His son hadn't died. His father died.
Oh,
but then Jim Crockett Promotions,
did he really die?
They had to sell to Ted Turner, but that was definitely an inside joke. Very good that you caught that. I'm curious if you caught the other one, because the other one was extremely hard.
I didn't know.
To catch.
When did his dad actually die?
Oh, his dad died. I would have to look it up. It was mentioned in the WCW DVD. I think he died in the 70s.
Oh, okay.
So he had died a while back. But I think this was more in reference to Jim Crockett Promotions.
Yes. But if the actual Jim Crockett died?
The father, yes, had died.
Okay.
We then go backstage. Gene Okerlund is with the Giant, who cut this promo.
Well, my thoughts right now, me and Gene, are very simple. Number one, if Hogan has the courage to show up, if he finds the heart to meet me on the roof of Cobo Hall, when we hook up, grill against grill, truck against truck, machine against machine, in that 100-foot diameter, it's not going to be big enough. Because I'm going to push him right clean off the roof, and if there's anything left, right out here, Joe Louis Arena, Hulk Hogan is going to end up giving me the world championship belt, because I'm going to choke slam him right through the floor. Do you understand me?
Look at that hand.
So he threatened to murder Hulk Hogan. That would be a tinge of irony later. And then we go to Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman taking on Sting, who had no tag team partner tonight because Ric Flair had been attacked earlier before the pay-per-view. So it's 2-on-1. And then this all built to Ric Flair showing up in street clothes and had a bandage on his forehead. And huge chance of We Want Flair. This guy was the most over babyface on the entire show. And I will say that they did a fantastic job of getting sympathy on Sting and building to this hot tag. This crowd was going apeshit, wanting to cheer Ric Flair to just beat the shit out of Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman. I thought they built it so well. They isolated Sting. They eventually, even Bobby Heenan, we got a Wilbur Snyder reference during an abdominal stretch spot with Arn Anderson giving the stretch to Sting. Flair was finally tagged in, and his work on the corner beat the work of anyone on the show up to this point. There was one part where Sting was in a submission, and he yells, "Nature Boy!" And Ric Flair yells, "I'm here! I'm here!" And then we got the tag, and Flair sucker punched Sting, beat up Sting, and we got a heel turn by Ric Flair, who rejoined the team of Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman and reformed the Horsemen. Not a bad match.
Flair was great. The build was like 10 minutes long for that hot tag.
It was a very long build.
It was a 10-minute long build.
I didn't mind it. I thought it was well done. And they cut a promo afterwards. Was there more you wanted to note from this match?
Not really.
They cut a promo after the Horsemen are back together. A fan threw a Coke bottle, and it landed right in the lap of the Horsemen, and they were standing. And then Arn knocked it off, and I thought it was great aim by the fan to catch them with that. And Okerlund was just incensed by this. He yelled, "This is ludicrous! Can we get a EMT for Sting?" Gene Okerlund was having none of this heel beatdown by the Horsemen.
No. He's a good guy. He's a good man.
Yeah. We then go backstage to a very, very pale Mike Tenay interviewing Lex Luger. And did Lex Luger say anything?
He was just rambling. He was just rambling and had nothing to say.
He was probably high. We then go to a video recapping the feud between Hulk Hogan and the Giant. Now, as campy as this might be, Way, you can't say there wasn't some long-term build behind this, because this feud began in July, and it was October by this part. And we had seen the Giant try and break his neck.
Is that a good thing that there was long-term build for this?
Maybe not. The storyline here was that the Giant was the son of Andre the Giant.
Yes.
And Andre named him the...
And how did he suddenly end up in a dungeon in the mountains?
Well, I guess he was left an orphan after his father passed away 2 years earlier.
Oh man, these recaps, they're very funny. They're actually
the voiceover
very
guy
funny.
I liked them.
They had a movie trailer dude do it, and the fact that this guy is talking that seriously while reading names like the Yeti and the Taskmaster.
Can't say the guy was doing it tongue-in-cheek. He was into this.
The set looked so shitty. It was like, it looked like a set that we could have made in university, in our RTA television production class.
Oh, the Dungeon of Doom set.
The Dungeon of Doom set.
Oh, yeah, it was horrible. This was totally out of EFP or studio class.
And then this dude dressed with that looks like a mummy starts walking out to the ring. Like, and he's called the Yeti, but Yetis are not mummies. They're like Sasquatches, but in the north. Yeah. Not a mummy.
You're getting ahead of ourselves. We're only at the monster truck rally yet. There's no Yeti yet.
And you're not even thinking about, I don't even talk about the monster trucks yet. There's monster trucks in all this too.
Yeah.
You have monster trucks, a dungeon, giants, Loch Ness monsters.
No one who has not seen this event can possibly fathom this stuff actually being booked. But this company did it on this night in 1995. They brought in Eric Bischoff and their special consultant, Bob... what was his name?
I don't know.
Bob Sheridan?
No.
Something
who cares?
Sheridan. I don't know. He designed Hulk Hogan's truck, and they are they're describing the vehicles. They go out to Cobo Hall, where there's a giant circle with flares. And they are welding the monster trucks together, so you have to overpower a monster truck and let both the back and front wheels go over the flares to determine a winner. Why this had to be done on a building, I don't understand. It seemed that they were just asking for trouble. Then they announced that both cars ran on alcohol, and I was thinking, this could be horrible. What could happen here? And Bobby Heenan just noted, this is exciting. I agreed. I did agree with him. And they then get into it where the trucks are going back and forth. We had aerial shots. They hired a helicopter crew for this.
This is probably one of the biggest wastes of Ted Turner's money ever in WCW.
They had a helicopter crew. Well, they booked Cobo Hall.
Yeah.
They built two monster trucks.
They lifted the trucks onto the roof of this building.
How did they do it? They airlifted it?
I don't know.
They probably had a crane operator.
They probably used the chopper.
Oh, my God. Hogan won this contest, if you can call it that. And from then, Giant got out and was going to beat the hell out of Hulk Hogan. And this is what happened.
He's going to throw him off the roof, Bischoff.
No. At the edge of the roof.
Whoa. You're going to get the fireman out there with the nets.
The Giant has got Hulk Hogan on the edge of the roof of Cobo Hall.
Oh, my. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Off of that. Somebody get him off of there. No. No.
Oh, my God.
No.
Oh, no. Help.
No!
No!
What do we do now?
I don't know what to say. We're back here in the arena. Somebody, I don't know, the truck's going to talk to me, tell me what's going on here. I don't know if they can hear me back there or not. We have got a serious problem here.
That wasn't supposed to happen.
So we are to believe that the giant fell off of the roof of Cobalt Hall. And I implore you, you must go watch this on YouTube. Because the visual of the giant falling off the roof, it's a moment that when I first saw this pay-per-view when I was about 12 years old, me and my one friend who watched wrestling must have watched this together and pressed rewind about 150 times and did not stop laughing at that level for each successive time. Yeah. To me, it was one of the greatest moments in wrestling history. Watching the giant, oh! And watching Hogan, oh no, oh no, help, somebody help. Why did Hulk Hogan reach his arm out to grab him? Do you realize that a giant grabbed onto him, Hogan would have gone over with him? This angle had such an effect on me as a child, Way. I don't want to overstate it, but when I was 15 years old, I went to an autograph session where the Big Show was doing autographs, and when I waited in line for about an hour, and when I got up there, I knew my one question, and I asked him, Big Show, how did you survive the fall off of Cobo Hall? And he signed my autograph, he put his eyebrows up and just looked at me, air mattresses. And then he looked down and gave me an autograph. And that was the day that I think the cynicism in wrestling was born inside of John Pollock that would go on to become the producer of Live Audio Wrestling. And they asked me, why am I down on wrestling? For me, that was the moment kayfabe was really killed for me. This guy couldn't give a fuck about this angle, or at least suspending my disbelief. He just looked at me and said, air mattresses. Air mattresses, Way.
Air mattresses. I mean, here I thought it was some sort of secret spell that the Taskmaster would put on the giant so that he would be able to survive. But no, it's just that simple.
Bischoff and Heenan had the task of selling this like a shoot.
Oh, man.
And this was unbelievable. Bischoff said that, I've got to go upstairs. We've got a match to get to.
How can these two come out and wrestle? They must be thinking about this man. I mean, they did a great job.
Bobby Heenan, I think, it was some of the best work he ever did in WCW. Yeah. He was convinced that the giant was dead. He even threw in the line, you don't understand, Tony, how far back I go with his father.
Yeah.
They really exploited the hell out of this.
Their reactions to the giant's fall
made it that much more better.
It was just like any wrestler dying on a pay-per-view. It was just like that.
I will commend Bobby Heenan's efforts. Tony Schiavone, on the other hand, had some of these gems. Well, we might not have a world title match tonight. No shit, Tony. Guy just fell 5 stories. Might not be challenging for the title tonight. He also noted, you never know what surprises we'll have here in WCW.
The poor guy who invented the truck, they interviewed him, too, for his reaction. And here's this guy who designed Bigfoot, who's like a legitimate, car mechanic. He was being forced to
I don't think he knew what was happening. I think this was all not. I don't think he was briefed on any of this.
What the fuck are you all thinking?
That wasn't supposed to happen.
Yeah. Wasn't supposed to happen.
Oh, we then go to Randy Savage and Lex Luger. Both men won their matches earlier in the evening to necessitate this match. Why, I don't know. Bobby Heenan is thinking ahead, stating, how am I going to do Nitro tomorrow night? Schiavone said, you just have to. Heenan then just snapped at one part and said, damn it, go find out more news. Can't we get someone up there?
He has a meltdown. Anyway, we'll get to that.
I'm not done with this, because Schiavone, Tony fucking Schiavone, notes, despite what happened, that monster truck match was nothing short of incredible. That's like saying, like after a Super Bowl event where there was a fire and everyone died. You know, that being said, it was a fantastic game.
It just, I mean, in hindsight,
Outside of the planes hitting the Twin Towers, way, it was a beautiful day that Tuesday morning.
In hindsight, all this did was just remind me of Over the Edge 1999, how exactly the same it could have felt like that day. And it was just kind of eerie.
I will say, I was not bored at all. I love this angle. I still love it.
So, Luger versus Savage.
Yeah, so we got distracted here. Jimmy Hart all of a sudden is at ringside here. They did a spot where Jimmy Hart got onto the apron, is distracting the referee. Luger bumped into Jimmy Hart, and then Savage hit the elbow for the win. This match was nothing. It was like 2 minutes. Yeah. Savage gets the win.
There's no attention being paid to this match at all. It only served as a backdrop for the death of the Giant. There are things in here that made no sense. Luger suddenly wrestles as a heel. Jimmy Hart appears for no reason. There's no Sullivan interaction, nothing. It makes no sense, but later it sort of does. But
actually, it didn't later, but we'll get to that. Hulk Hogan comes out for his match. I don't know why. He then cut a promo stating that the Giant's fall was a shoot, brother. Then the Giant comes out with Kevin Sullivan. And what did you make of this way?
Well,
the Giant comes out.
Let me just say, you had Michael Buffer do the introductions for this.
So out of place.
Michael Buffer, how much does it cost to get him, John? How much do you think?
Oh, dude, he wasn't doing this for less than 10 grand.
Just to say those few words, let's get ready to rumble. In the middle of his introduction, you have Hulk Hogan interrupting him. And then you have the Giant walkout. So Michael Buffer, who you're paying, I don't know, thousands of dollars for, doesn't even get to utter his lines. Giant is back from the dead, and here we have Paul White's first ever televised matchup.
I think this is his first match ever.
First match ever?
On pay-per-view, in the main event.
On television.
After he died.
Yeah, first match on the WCW.
And this match was...
very standard Hogan man match.
The Giant worked this match. I would say he was just shit in this match, which for his first match, congratulations. Hogan had the Taskmaster's paint on him. I guess they were doing some deal that he had gone to the dark side.
How? How does that make sense?
That incorporated using makeup on his forehead.
What deal? He just wrestled against the Giant in the monster truck. When did he make this deal?
I guess backstage he realized he murdered a man, and the only way out is to join the Taskmaster. Huge bear hug spot that made me have to fast forward again.
The bear hug is definitely not the most visually devastating maneuver.
It would pale in comparison to a finisher we would see later on.
All right.
It built up to Hogan being chokeslammed. He then hulked up, body slammed the Giant. Then Jimmy Hart attacked the ref, turning heel here. The Giant and Kevin Sullivan attack Hogan with the ref knocked out. Luger and Savage run in. Then Luger attacks Savage. Then the Yeti runs in, which Tony Schiavone was putting over huge.
And he joins in on the bear hug that the Giant was giving to Hulk Hogan.
Which looked like the two were bum-rushing Hogan. Like, that's all it looked like. We had Hogan
in a bear hug
spot, and then the Yeti comes from behind Hogan, and they just, like, are gangbanging Hogan.
They're group-hugging Hogan. This is exactly
what it was the least impressive or devastating maneuver in wrestling history.
One of the dumbest looking visuals in WCW history, and that combined with the Giant falling off of Cobo Hall makes this pay-per-view a landmark.
The Giant wins the match by DQ. He steals the title. Tony Schiavone just yells out, "What's happened?" This didn't make sense on a lot of levels. We had Jimmy Hart, who basically fucked up Luger's last match, and now they're all together. Wouldn't he have helped Savage lose the match?
I don't know.
So we have the Dungeon of Doom formed, consisting of the Giant, Jimmy Hart, Lex Luger, and the Yeti, and Kevin Sullivan. The Yeti, just picture this visual. He was a mummy, a full mummy with like tape all around him. Just
who
a
walked
ridiculous
like Franken,
character.
Who walked like Frankenstein. Michael Buffer, has no idea what the fuck's going on.
Could you imagine if he had done a boxing pay-per-view the night prior and then doing this?
There's no wonder he doesn't do these anymore. He has no clue what to announce, and he starts announcing that the Giant has won, and then he receives word that this is a DQ, and the Giant has not won the title. But the following night on Nitro, I guess, they announced that Jimmy Hart had actually negotiated in the contract that DQs would result in the title change. So Paul White becomes champion thanks to help from the Yeti.
In the most overbooked match ever to get the title off of Hogan.
The people in the building start filing out, by the way, even as Hogan and Savage were still
this
in the
ring.
This
was a tremendously bad show. The credits then rolled for the WCW pay-per-view, and it was noting all the different people, and they did hire an outside helicopter service for the big monster truck rally, and I swear to God, it was McMahon Helicopter Services.
Wow. Interesting.
I give this pay-per-view a 7 out of 10.
Oh, my God.
Because I really enjoy the Paul White.
You are sick, John.
I enjoy the monster truck stuff and him falling off the roof. It's still one of my favorite cheesy angles of all time. And I think every wrestling fan should see this show.
This is one.
It's not good at all, but at the same time, it's must-see. This is what I wanted out of Heroes of Wrestling and didn't get.
This is what it's like when someone with terrible ideas gets a lot of money to do whatever they want. I'm sorry, John, I can't agree. I give this a 3 out of 10. I did not enjoy it. I fell asleep. I can't watch these in one sitting. I just don't have the energy.
It's tough. So what do you give this?
I said 3 out of 10.
Oh, I wasn't listening. All right, so a 7 out of 10 and a 3 out of 10. So now we're switching it up a little where we're going to alternate weeks. So next week, Wei is going to decide what we're going to review. So Wei, you've had a week to think about it, and what are we going to chat about next week here?
Well, since we are switching it up a little, we've done a lot of pay-per-views, a lot of WCW pay-per-views, so I thought it would be interesting to do a WCW movie.
Oh.
Let's do Ready to Rumble.
Oh, my. Ready to Rumble. All right. Do you have a copy of it?
I don't have a copy, but I have a link online.
Perfect.
Yeah.
We'll do
if
that.
You, by the way, if you want to see this epic sumo monster truck war, you can. There's a link on the official Facebook group. You can watch it for yourself.
Be sure to go join it. The official Facebook group of Review Away. You can always send feedback to way@thefightnetwork.com and john@thefightnetwork.com, and we will read it here on the show.
Yeah.
And since you picked the song, you picked the review for next week. I thought we could go out with the Dungeon of Doom's theme music, which just consisted of a man cackling.
Oh, God.
Happy Halloween, everybody.